Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to Goalie Science, the podcast that bridges the gap between goaltending, science, and peak performance. I'm your host, Jamie Phillips, a former professional goalie, currently pursuing a doctorate in physical therapy and specializing in goalie performance coaching. Joining me as always is Dr. Ben Cernik, a seasoned goalie coach and sports analytics specialist. Whether you find yourself at home, on the road, or at the rink, grab a cup of your favorite beverage and let's drop the puck on this week's episode.
Jamie, it's another week and you're recording a podcast in 47 degree Fahrenheit weather at a coffee shop in Michigan. How are we feeling?
Yeah. So listeners and viewers, don't ever say I didn't do anything for you. No, it's kind of my own fault. I rant about it every single week, how bad the internet is at the place I'm renting. Good news. Next week's podcast, I should be in my own place and I am paying a lot of money for the fast internet, because I am just over it right now. So definitely subscribe to the Patreon so I can continue to pay for the internet. But I just couldn't do it. And I actually have been hitting my hotspot on my phone for all my calls so much that I hit the hotspot limit. And I didn't even know that was a thing, but apparently I hit it.
This is unbelievable.
So I had to go spend $4 on a brewed coffee. And you know what? Shout out Stovetop Roasters, though. It's not Madcap, but it is a local Grand Rapids thing. And since I am now a Grand Rapids resident, big Grand Rapids guy.
That's hilarious, Jimmy. That is by far the fastest you've gotten a Patreon plug in the history of the podcast. But
that's $70 a month for internet.
Look, I didn't say it's cheap. You're out here working, Jimmy. Let's get into it today.
Yeah.
We gotta unpack a few things. We gotta unpack an interesting topic. But as what has become the norm, Jamie, I'm gonna give you 3 minutes for Jamie's soapbox, the segment on the podcast where Jamie rants about something that probably doesn't matter that much, but he's got to get off the chest.
No, it definitely matters to me. So I guess in the reality, it doesn't matter to anybody. I wish we could record our pre-podcast chats, but there'd be way too much swearing. One of the things too, so in the last like 2 weeks, I've been putting a lot of content out about tracking, and our last podcast was about tracking and a lot of the science around it. And we just want to reiterate that, like, when objects are moving at a very high speed, sometimes they exceed the limits of what we can actually like have an input, like see what's going on and create an output. And we call that, to simplify it, pattern mapping. It's a nice, easy term. What was the other term that we used?
Perception. It's basically essentially perception action coupling, which is, if you're a big science nerd, if you're a big motor skill acquisition and motor learning a person, perception action coupling is really simple. It's picking up what information from the environment you get and then the actual movement that responds to that environment, right? And sometimes we're able to do it really deliberately. Think if someone like underhand tosses a softball to you, you can watch it to you. And other times the information we get is not the flight of the puck or the ball, but it's all the free information that we have to make our movement decision based off of. Anyways, mental aspect of motor learning.
And so with that, that post that I put out actually garnered a lot of shares, a lot of likes and stuff, which is good because I want more people to understand and think critically, because That's kind of my big mission with everything, is improving goalie performance science literacy. And there was a few larger social media goalie coaches that were, you know, making fun of it, which is fine. Like, everyone's allowed to do things, of course. But, you know, it frustrates me because it's not as much as I don't really care if someone makes fun of me. Like, I make fun of me too. Like, there's a lot of things I'm not good at. Like, I'm a goofy guy. I'm sitting outside in Michigan talking on a podcast. But ultimately, I think not understanding the why and not having a basic understanding of some of the principles, especially the motor learning, biomechanics, sports performance principles, as a coach, hurts the goalie community as a whole. You don't have to be an absolute, I almost swore there, sorry. You don't have to be a PhD. You don't have to be you don't have to have even a college education to be a really good coach. But I think you can't be ignorant to science and performance science. And it's really important. And so, you know, the thing that they were, a lot of them were saying, they're like, no, you absolutely can read the release and like things. I'm like, well, look, I don't conduct any of this research. There's been tens of millions of euros and dollars have been put into this research by people significantly smarter than me. And we're just trying to distill it and translate it in a way that's easily digestible and understandable and also actionable. Like my post today, so it's Saturday the 11th, my post today was, how do you actually treat the release? And it's just like getting a lot of reps and having tracking practice and doing all these things so that your brain can create that map. And so the example I was giving to some of my goalies, because we were talking about this, and it was during a normal team practice, and I said, okay, when the guys are coming in on flow drills, and you know, shooters they come down to the top of the hash marks or bottom of the hash marks most of the time and just rip it, like they don't care. And so I just said, okay, when they get that close, that tight, or even the top of the circles, where it's a dangerous area, I want you to yell out where they're shooting and see how you do. And they were terrible. The only ones they stopped were the ones that they guessed. And that's just like, that's just the reality, because you can't consciously process that quickly. So if that's the case, and when someone's shooting, you're not looking at the blade and thinking, okay, that blade is angled up and he's twisted slightly, so that means he's going to be shooting high blocker and then still create something. How do we make saves? Well, we have an answer. We actually have a scientific answer to these things. And so you don't have to understand it, read the research, but you can't just be like, oh no, you watch the player's body. Just read the player's body. Okay, sure. Next time you go on the ice, so everyone listening, and I'm getting frustrated now. Every time you go on the ice, next time you go on the ice, I want you to, just for the fun of it, doing a flow drill, do what I just said before, see how that goes, especially when guys are shooting or girls are shooting really quickly. And then the second one is, I want you to look at the player's body, not the stick, and then try to make the save. And then tell me how that goes. And you'll see, obviously, it's going to be difficult. And because your brain pattern maps, what is the body doing? Because it has this vast archive of shots and what are the body positions. That's why it's so hard when a guy like Matthew shoots behind his body, because he's catching a puck behind him and releasing it behind him. Your brain isn't used to that. Your brain isn't used to someone catching it, bringing it forward, and then shooting it. So it's completely different. Or when guys are really good at disguising the release, your brain can't put that input and get an output fast enough because it's completely new and novel. Or wire tips and wire fluttering pucks so hard to save because it's a novel stimulus that our brain isn't prepared for. And so that's ultimately kind of where my rant's going, is that it's okay to not understand science or certain complex topics. There's so many things I don't understand. And I lost the time. I know you didn't saw that, but I defer to you on so many things. Like, Ben, can you explain this to me? Like, I'm five. Because it's important for us to continually grow and progress. And we look at hockey, and in terms of like sports science and sports research, it's so behind, like immensely behind. We look at like, especially the UK and Europe, all these like, especially like university affiliated teams or like big soccer clubs, they have the tracking, they have the data stuff. And the NHL is like getting that too, but the NHL doesn't like fund it, which I wish they would. And a lot of universities don't fund it in hockey, and there's a lot of barriers to that. But hockey's behind for a reason. And if people aren't pushing for it to start to come and get to the other level of other sports, then it's always going to be behind, or people are always going to have to go out to private like places because they're not going to get those resources from the team or from whatever, because the teams can't afford it. So then they have to pay a lot of money for certain things, and it gets really frustrating. But ultimately, to make a long story long, is we don't create this content or have Goalie Science podcast to talk about how smart we are or how clever and like cool I do it so that we can ultimately help the goalie community and start to bridge that gap, like you say in the intro, between science and the application on the ice. And how can we put it in a way? Because if I go on the ice and I tell my kids, hey, I want you to pattern map this. No, I say, I want you to read the release and we're going to focus on some tracking situations. And it's ultimately to build that bank. And so it's all to help the goalie community. We're not trying to overcomplicate it. And you know what? And if you're a coach listening and you don't understand, that's completely okay. What's not okay is to not go and try to learn it or learn from others, just like we learn from others, to be able to advance your coaching practice. Thank you. That is definitely more than 3 minutes, but that's my cup of tea.
I think if there's anything that I can personally add to that, because we talked a little about research last week and we talked a little about some stuff from handball, but in those handball studies I talked about last week, the goalies actually like still guessed wrong or still picked the wrong side when they were doing the task of trying to figure out from the video and from the simulation what side the player was going, right? And guessing's pretty common, a common thing, or anticipation's a common approach in soccer and handball. We don't have as much anticipation in hockey because the net is relatively smaller to our positional abilities, right? Like for those of people who are listening, who have ever seen a box lacrosse goalie, their job is to get in position and essentially try not to move too much, right? Because their equipment's so massive and the net's so small, right? That's why hockey is probably a little bit slow adapting from a goalkeeper anticipation side of things, is because a lot of what goalies have done for a long time is just get in position and get hit. Like, I think a lot of people listen to this, I know we have a lot of younger goalies who do listen to this, but the parents listening are also going to know that the mid and early 2000s, the blocking era was one of the worst eras to watch goaltending in. It was just, so there was not a single tracking they made.
No.
2001 to 2005.
And that was, a lot of that was the equipment, development equipment, and also like the development in goalie training, which wasn't necessarily like focused on tracking, but it was outpacing where the players were, and because of that there was such an advantage, and then the gear had to get smaller and all these changes had to be made. And then, you know, now like with the way that sports performance and the business of it, and like, well, the business driving everything, the money behind it, the players are outpacing the goalies, and there's a reason for that. Absolutely. And eventually something is going to have to change, or goalies have to get better, or maybe it's the new normal of giving up this many goals on average. The average goals are higher. I mean, that's okay. But then we have to accept that, okay, like having an 8.98 is going to be a good save percentage now, and that's going to be the average save percentage. So it's okay. But to not do anything and to not try to make changes and not try to grow, and then to give answers to that, that's where I get frustrated, because I've been skating with so many goalies now that are doing something, and I'll be like, okay, so why are you doing it this way? And you know what their answer is? I don't know, my goalie coach told me. Well, I was like, did you ask why? Did you ask why they say that? They're like, no, they just told me to do it. And I'm like, okay, well, if you feel comfortable with it, for sure, but you need to explain to someone why you're doing something, and what is the purpose, and what is the advantage or the disadvantage, and let them, you know, kind of add it or take it away from their game if they need it. But to just like, oh, do this because I said so. Or like, sometimes I go down rabbit holes on Instagram and I saw, it wasn't me. I was just looking at some other people's profiles, and like someone would like say something and it'd be like, well, I played hockey for 20 years. You can't tell me what to do. It's like, well, that's not really a good answer. I played hockey for a long time, but like, usually that's not my thing. It's like, okay, the reason that I want you to use an RVH or VH here is because this, not because that's how I used to do it. because I probably wouldn't do what I did because I wasn't that green at a lot of things. So don't do what I did.
Do you know what's one of those that is like, that's a really good example, is that's something that I think we take for granted as coaches sometimes. Sometimes something as simple as why we shuffle post to post and why we don't T-push post to post.
That's a good, you know what?
My favorite example. Yeah.
I love that because I love when I get like young kids, almost older goalies will shuffle. Probably they've been told or they just figured it out. But the young kids always T-push. I love talking about that. I love it.
Oh, yeah. And again, that's, I think, one of my big examples of when I'm working with new goalies or new goalies to me, and they may have skated with someone else or they may have not really trained with anyone else, and they'll T-push for the first time. And I'll tell them, hey, we're going to want you to shuffle. And then I explain why. And I really started doing this in the past little while. I want you to shuffle because you need to be able to go back the other way quickly. You need to be able to go down. You need to be able to slide. And if you open that leg up to T-push, you're not going to be able to do half those things.
And you also can't. So I was going to say, and you also try looking behind you when you're T-pushing. Because if you're going post to post.
I've never done.
This is the best thing. I always say, why are we going post to post? I don't know. Well, where is the puck? Where is the puck going? And if the puck's going behind the net from one side to the other, do a T-push, open up your hips, and try to turn around and tell me how your balance is. And they fall over every time. And so I say this allows us to keep that balance, to keep being mobile, allow us to move into multiple different situations. That's why we go shuffle post to post. So now that you think that, I realize that is also one of my favorite examples. It blows the mind of some of these 8 or 9 year olds that have never ever thought of that before.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, and that's what good coaching does. Is it explains not only why we're doing something, but as coaches, we should want to give our goalies, our students, opportunities to make decisions that work for them, right? There's some things that are pretty non-negotiable, like this is a shuffle. You should probably do it this way. But having them understand what their options are and why they should select the option that works best for them, sometimes they need to know the pros and cons of their option.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
Again, for this silly little shuffle T-push example, once you explain it, why we should probably do one over the other, and then you ask them which one they want to use, they'll use the shuffle, even if the T-push is a little faster at first. But they'll know that, yeah, this one's going to give me more choices, I'm going to be better. And again, that's pretty cool to see when little goalies get that, because they're tiny humans and they're understanding a pretty complex theories of decisions that they have to make. Okay, that's enough of that, Jamie. Harsh transition. This is where we put our commercial for our plug if we had one, but we don't. So we're working on that. Jamie, this week we're going to talk about some goal setting. And after this little bit of rant and after this little bit of something that you want to get off your chest, let's get into something positive that we can do with goalies out there. And so we had some people reach out. They were curious about, what's a good way to goal set for a season as a goalie? How do we do that? What are things we can work towards? And then how do we measure those things as a goalie? So let's take it away, Jamie. Go ahead.
Okay, so the first thing, this is a Patreon question request. So again, that's one of the upsides of being on Patreon. Your questions get answered on there, and then sometimes you answer an entire podcast. But when it comes to making goals, it's important. So how I like to set it up is to use that classic SMART goal setup. And I know if you've been in school, you've probably talked about SMART goals, and you're probably rolling your eyes right now. And if you use it in healthcare with the amount of documenting and things you have to do with that just to make sure that insurance will okay your billing, then SMART goals are probably okay for us, just the normal performance leg. So SMART stands for measurable, SMART stands for simple or specific.
Specific.
I've heard both.
Okay.
But it can be simple or specific. Specific, measurable, attainable.
Realistic, Jamie. The R is realistic.
Yeah, realistic. And then I've heard
the T is time.
Time or time frame. And so you want a goal that is specific. So it's saying I want to have a good season. That's not a specific goal. So it's I want to be in the top three of wins leaders. That is a specific goal. Measurable is something that can be measured. Saying I want to have a good season. How do you measure that? That is a subjective thing. If you want it to be measurable, then it's like, okay, then you need to have some sort of stat. You need to have some sort of win, loss, some sort of objective variable with that. The next is attainable. Something is attainable. Me saying I want to win the Stanley Cup next year is not attainable. Could be a goal.
That's not entirely true. You could get hired on as a
me as a starting goalie.
That is not attainable.
That is not. It's not attainable, but you'd have probably have a better chance of winning the lottery. And so that's something that's attainable, realistic. Again, so I would say that has to go into that, you know, winning the Stanley Cup. And then timeline. So something that you can say it. So within 4 months, I would like to, or at the end of the season, I would like to, and that gives you that time frame to work towards. So whenever I'm sitting down with goalies, I'm creating goals. I try to make them smart goals. And then I also set them up in the two time frames, short-term and long-term. And those short-term goals need to build into the long-term goals. So if the goal is...
Jamie, we've got a major issue here. Hold on. We've got a major issue.
What's up?
The R is relevant. Neither of us are smart people. The R is relevant, not realistic. Relevant goals are, I would like to win 10 games. A not relevant goal is, I would like to hit a home run. You can't do that in hockey, so it's probably not relevant to your goals.
But wouldn't that also be similar to realistic? Because it's not realistic.
Yeah, I think, look, there's overlap. I just want to get ahead.
You know what? We're not the smartest. We're not the smartest. There's a lot of things we're good at, and remembering acronyms is not one of them.
Remembering mnemonics is not.
Yeah. So realistic or
relevant.
Or relevant will be the R, and I think they fall under the same umbrella. So that's how I like to break the down. I think Ben does as well. And then short-term and long-term goals. So if your short-term goal is, you know, in the next 3 weeks, I would like to have 75% wins, something, something, something. And then over the course of this season is I would like to be the wins leader in the league, and they build into each other.
Yeah, and so the first thing that I'll say, and so that's kind of the overview of an idea of what goal setting could look like. I don't sit down with goalies and have them write out SMART goals, but we definitely are influenced by, you know, the framework that's used there. But there's a couple tips that I think are really important for goalies to understand. And if you've been following the podcast for a little while, you've probably heard us talk a lot about how, as a goalie, you are at the mercy of your team and the other team a lot of the times. We are a reactionary position. That is, again, you can only stop what is shot at you. You cannot create things, right? You can't say, I'm going to make 20 glove saves a game, because you have absolutely no ability to control that, right? You might not get 20 glove saves a game, or glove shots towards your glove side. So don't think about that. And so in that exact same vein, looking at something like wins as an outcome as a goalie, I always try to be really cautious about. Just because, unfortunately, as a goalie, you cannot score a lot of goals for your team. You might not even get one in your entire career. So wins feels like something that can be out of your control a little bit. And when we're making goals for ourselves and we're trying to see how we can measure and set those goals and achieve them, we have to be, again, a little bit aware of what we can and can't control. And so you can be a great goalie and you can win zero games in a season, and you can have a 970 high danger save percentage and have all these amazing statistics, but you didn't win the game because your team didn't score a goal, right? So that's just something that I think is worth considering as well, is how can you make the goals that are under your control? What can you control about your own personal goal setting?
I agree 100% with that. I don't think, you know, if you want to set a wins goal, I don't think it's the worst thing. I don't think it's the best thing, just because it's not like you're playing golf, where you are in control of your stroke, and other than like things like the environment, you have a lot of control. But I know a lot of goalies do, but sometimes when I talk to goalies and they're making win goals, I'll usually say, like, I'll try to tie it into something. It will be like, over the course of the next 4 months, I would like to have this many wins or this many games played where I feel confident, or I stop something. I can't feel confident. It's not really measurable, but I feel like I am able to stop 90% of the high danger scoring chances, hopefully resulting in 75% more wins than losses. And it's just like, it gets complicated. So actually goal setting for goalies is not really easy. I remember some teams growing up where they give you goals and they're always the same. Like, oh, I want a 930 save percentage. And I was like, and it's just like, well, yeah, everyone does, yeah. Man. Like I still want one. Like I haven't had one since college, yeah. You know, like, it is more complicated, but just trying to be like realistic and relevant, I think is probably the main one. And also measurable. I like when goalies make their goals with a lot of things like outside where it's like, I will be able, like if you ever do like skating tests, and I know skating tests are always like, there's different, but it's like, I will improve my skate test ability, like speed by a couple of milliseconds. Cause there's like, okay, like when I do is the start of the year and the end of the year, I have additions, or like, I will get my middle splits down to 4 inches hovering above the ground by the end of the season. Okay, right. Cool. And so those are things that are in your control, but I will stop 90% of breakaways. Well, if Connor Bedard's coming down on you every time, you're probably not, you know, it's hard. It's tough.
Yeah. And I think there's a few that I really like, a few that I've started using more. One of them is for like a performance setting on the ice in games. A couple things. When we talked about short and long term, I actually like using a bunch of series of short term segments. So goalies in minor hockey and even junior goalies play a lot of games, right? So I like to think about things over maybe like a 4 or 5 game block, these like game segments. So for the next 4 or 5 games, I don't want to let in any medium danger stuff. I don't want to let in anything between just around the top of the circles. That's my goal. I'm going to dial in. I'm going to make sure I'm not going to let those in because that's that distance that we've talked about before. You want to stop every one of them, but some of them do just go in. That's just the nature of it, right? Or a really good one that I've seen a lot, and I think it's totally fair to say this, is like over the next month, I don't want to give up anything from farther than above the top, right? And you can try it. You can control that. That can be your goal. I'm going to be, you know, sometimes as goalies, we can be guilty of the one-on-two shot where you know that player's not coming in. You kind of aren't 100% focused on that shot, right? We've all like almost been handcuffed by that or been scored on that. Right. So having that as a short term goal for your performance, you can, maybe that makes you a little bit more dialed in on those lower danger shots that maybe, you know, for some of us out there aren't always as focused as we can be. Some other things that Jamie, I think you mentioned really well, is preparation goals or off ice actionable goals, right? Like I'm going to come to the rink every time and I'm going to get focused. I'm going to come in there. I'm going to get my warm up stretching done. I'm going to be on time. And if your goalies are listening to their parents, maybe that can be a together goal. How do we make sure that we're getting to the rink on time beforehand so that you have enough time to prepare? So that can be an involved activity too, right? Or if you're a junior goalie, how do you make sure that the people loading the bus are making sure it's on time? That matters too, right? Like I think everyone who's played junior or college has showed up to a game late, and that is a scrambling experience. So those are kind of some fun things too, right? I think
even like
from like a statistic, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and even with that, there's sometimes things out of your control. I can give an example where, you know, I played in the UK and we were going to Cardiff and we showed up 5 minutes before warm up because there was 4 accidents. We left to be 2 hours before the game and it just took us two hours. So like, you know, there's so many times so many things you can control. So making those goals.
How'd you play that game?
You know what? We lost, but I actually played pretty solid. I played pretty solid in Cardiff. We lost in a shootout. But like we got outshot, no chance. They were so good that year. We got outshot, no chance. Recently.
Hey, am I making this up? Sorry, this is a super tangent. Am I making this up or did you not set a record for like most shots stopped in a row when you were over in Manchester? And you have like a 48 save shutout into like a 51 save shutout? Am I making that up?
Oh yeah, I think I did. I think I did set a. I don't know what it is though, but I remember I did something like a record setting.
It was like most saves in a back-to-back game or something. Like
yeah, it was definitely in Manchester. It's crazy that you remember these things and I don't. I think just
super like, fan, man, super fan.
I think the thought of just me after getting sacked, as they say, sacked from the team and crying in my little tiny wrong-handed car. In the parking lot, I just like blacked a lot of these things out. But I did something. I just did have a good game there, at least one good game.
No, yeah, and that's talking JB's IHL career for it. to kind of wrap up the goal setting thing, I think having, again, short-term and long-term goals is a super healthy thing. I think if we can, we've talked a lot about kind of some statistics stuff the past few weeks, and you'd like to bring, you know, the data into hockey a lot. If you have something you want to aim for, if you are, again, a goalie, minor hockey, junior hockey, I think these are some good numbers. If you can try to aim to be 80% save percentage inside the inner house, I think that's a really great number, right? Especially for our goalies who are on maybe teams that are struggling a little bit, teams that give up more chances, you might not be able to control your overall save percentage because your team gives up a lot of high danger chances. But if you can be 80% on those high dangers, you're crushing it. You're doing a great job, right? Those inner slot shots. So that can be a goal for you. Same thing. I kind of like this new thing, this 80-90-97 rule. You'll like the arbitrary 97, but that's what I like for inner slots, those mediums, and then those low dangers. If we can do that, then I think we're doing a good job, right? Like, again, I always say that a shot from the point should be a 1% shot. You can see it. You should make 99 saves out of 100 times that puck comes on net. And if you're doing that, you're doing a great job. So that's my statistics little slice in. For those who are getting peppered a ton in those high danger areas, make your goal again. Let's say I'm going to try to get an 80% save percentage on these high dangers. I'm going to try to control that. I'm not going to worry about it if, you know, we're giving up 14 a game. Yeah, they're going to score 4 goals. They're going to score 3 goals. That's going to happen, right? But control what you can control. Try to make that some valuable. And then, like we've talked about in this episode, right? Try to find goals that you can follow along with, whether they're in the short term, whether they're in the longer term. And I think that'll be really helpful. I like this, Jamie. I'm a big believer in goal setting.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good kind of way for people here.
I think so too. Let's go into our next segment. Did we get Joseph Wolf a call up? Dustin Wolf a call up?
A lot of people are saying that, yes, this is us. We got Dustin Wolf called up. So everyone who, all the media who reported on Dustin Wolf, the fact that you did not credit us, concerning.
Yeah, it's actually pretty messed up that you gave him all the credit.
Yeah.
But this actually turns into another topic that we'll use to wrap these up. And I'll get tied into a two-part series. NHL goalies might not be the best in the league, but they are still the top 64 best in the world. So when I posted a story saying that, where I reposted someone else's story talking about Wolf's numbers, and I said, like, I think they should call him up. But the problem is he's behind Marshall and Vladar, who are two really good goalies. The amount of
very good goalies,
the amount of DMs I got, they're like, they're both trash. They're so bad. And like, and it's hard because we like sports for whatever reason gives us this visceral emotional reaction where we just get it, like just jump to it. But remember, like, you're still watching the best in the world. And like, whenever I know, and if you've listened to this podcast or you ever talk to me, you'll know that whenever I talk about an NHL goalie, I'll say relative to their peers, they are very good or they are average or they are bad, because they're still the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. They're still incredible, incredible talents. So just remember that it's not that easy. It's not that black and white. And so, and also just because they're pro athletes, it doesn't give us a right as people who are not pro athletes to disparage them or like make fun of them, even though we think it does. We think that they owe us something and they don't. And it's like the Jack Campbell gets sent down. I can assure you, he knows that's not a good thing. And he knows he hasn't been playing well, and he knows he hasn't been playing well, and he's on a bad team, which is the worst combination of all. And so like when he got called down, the amount of like memes and like comments and all these things, and I read them and I'm like, everyone commenting, imagine every time that you messed up at your job of who knows what it is. Like you're making a coffee.
Every time you send a bad report out.
Yeah. Every time you send a bad report, just the internet blows up and tells you how awful you are and how like, you know, like they legit death threats and like horrible things. And so it's like, stop before you go and like become a keyboard warrior. What would you do if that was you? Or what would you do if that was your kid? How would you feel if that was your kid or your friend? And you sit there and you're like, ah, okay. And you know what, Cage? Jack Campbell got sent down to the American League. He's now in the top 128 best goalies in the world. So
he'll be back.
Still pretty darn good. Do I think he's a great goalie relative to his peers? No, I don't. And I think that that's okay. But he's still one of the best goalies in the entire world. So I get frustrated to see that because in all sports, and no matter what the sport is, I get frustrated because it's like, look, these are people too. This is their jobs. And yes, like you, being a pro athlete, you're going to open yourself up for criticism. But like, relax. Like, do you really need to have, does there really need to be 2,000 comments talking about how bad Jack Campbell got sent down? Like, okay, everyone agrees with you. Sweet. Like, I don't know.
That's talking online bullying. That's talking cyberbullying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have nothing to add to that. I think Jack Campbell's a really nice guy. I think he's really struggled in Edmonton, and I hope he doesn't continue to struggle. I hope he kind of finds a little bit of joy, and I hope he finds some success in Bakersfield, and then he can come back up and help the Oilers, who are the worst team in the NHL at giving up high danger chances right now. Well, rush chances, I should say. They're the worst rush team in the NHL. And Jack Campbell struggled a little bit on the rushes. One last comment. Jack Campbell, as he was sent down, was actually on the season less than 2 goals below expected from the advanced models of goaltending performance, which like is not good. It's below 0, so it's bad. But it's like not that bad. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't that bad. And so people can agree and disagree with that as it is, but that's just my one extra note. He was not that bad. He struggled. It was not like, it wasn't like it was a bad goal. Jamie, we're low on time today.
Yeah, I know. But
hold on, you're cut off. We're low on time.
No, before we get into good shot, bad goal, good shot, good goal, or whatever we want to call it. We always talk about how with young athletes, young goalies, we want them. It's actually sometimes better to be on a bad team to get like a lot of shots growing up. But do you think that if you play it on the San Jose Sharks now, like a really bad team, the Edmonton Oilers, I guess San Jose Sharks, you're almost like a meme how bad you are and everyone expects you to lose. Do you think you can play almost carefree because you're so bad? Or is the constant shellacking detrimental long-term?
I think someone's going to pay Mackenzie Blackwood a lot of money because he's going to have a lot of really good games this year where he makes a million saves. And so if I'm Mackenzie Blackwood, who bet on himself going to San Jose as a new chance to be a starter, but for him, someone's going to pay him a lot of money. Should they pay him that much? We'll see. Time will tell how much money he gets. Okay, Jamie, last few minutes, we're wrapping up here. The segment, as you should know by now, because it's our second time doing it, is good shot, bad goal of the week. And our good shot, bad goal of the week goalie recipient is Caden Primeau, who unfortunately got beat short side on an RVH goal. And we had a great 10-minute debate before the Zet podcast about what went wrong on this. And honestly, not a lot went wrong. He was a little low on an RVH, and someone went short side and pinged him. He wasn't paddled down. He wasn't skate on post. He didn't get a perfect steal. He wasn't skate on post, Jamie. Don't bring this back up. We've got the video. Jamie's going to superimpose.
I am. I am going to
argue in the comments. I want to see the comments. I want to see what people are saying. Was he skate on post, or was it just not a perfect boot lock? Either way,
yeah.
Short side RVH goals, Jamie, they're never fun.
Yeah, never fun. I do thoroughly believe that he was skate on post. He's probably hit the toe.
He was not skate on post.
Probably the toe of his skate. He's probably the toe of his skate on the post. But he definitely wasn't boot flat, like boot nice tight seal. So good shot. I watched it many times, and I was like, do you think RVH is the right choice? I do. I actually do think it was the right
choice. I think it was the right choice.
Because I looked at it, I was like, maybe he should have bumped. No. He was still
right choice.
Like, where I call the golden triangle, and it's not a perfect rule, but it's still in that shot. The only thing is maybe he could have had that back, his anchor leg, just a little bit more forward or less flat, so we could have pushed up more. But even then,
yep.
Maybe you've saved it. I don't know. We don't know. He's still a good shot.
Sometimes, like, good shot, not a fun goal to let in. Yeah, that's the one thing I would say, maybe. If we can, for goalies out there, if you're in an RVH and someone's looking for that small spot over your short side shoulder, make sure your back leg and back skate are engaged into the ice. You don't want to have a relaxed back leg. You want to be pushing into your post with your back leg, and that'll help you shore up that short side.
Say it a million times of practice. I say it a million times of practice. It's your anchor leg. It's your anchor and your rudder. It needs to lock you in the post, and you need to be able to use it to control yourself.
Ooh, I like that a lot. All right, that's what we got this week. A little bit on goal setting, Jamie's soapbox, and a little couple extra segments on the end. So, Jamie, it's that time of the episode. Where should people find you, and where should people subscribe to you?
Well, subscribe to me on Patreon. Follow Ben and I on social media. It helps. If you live in the greater Oshawa area and you have a high-quality camera or phone that you would like to donate to Ben, I am trying and harping on Ben, so if we can increase the video quality of the podcast, it's kind of our next goal. as Ben absolutely destroys the contracts of his place. We are trying to improve the video quality. That's going to be our goal probably over the next month in the Christmas holidays, and actually maybe finally an in-person pod over Christmas when I come home. But hey. Yeah, leave comments. Let us know about that premium goal. Was he skied on post? Was he not? Comments, likes, shares, do everything. Just, we appreciate this a ton. We just appreciate people for listening and actually, you know, kind of caring about science and performance.
And most importantly, please let Jamie know that Caden Primo's escape was not that is the most important thing you can do. All right, Jamie. Hopefully this was helpful, people. I hope people will enjoy this. And hopefully we can hear some goal setting that goalie is going to do for maybe the rest of the season or moving forward here, because that'd be really fun. But for now, talk to you next time.
Next time.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.